Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. And our, perhaps, shall we say, provocative topic for today is...
Proposition, the Brady Bunch was a disaster for blended families. Discuss.
Yes, indeed. Now, you know, am I going after, you know, motherhood and apple pie? How dare I say anything about the Brady Bunch being a disaster? I know for some people that perhaps will be just heresy.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wonder, Judy, if that would be true for you even.
Oh, yes. I love the Brady Bunch.
And you know, that may be a little bit about the difference in our ages, because we've mentioned before I'm a little over 6 years older than you. And so... The Brady Bunch, you know, I meant to look this up, but the Brady Bunch was more associated with the sort of early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And by then I was already, you know, like in college or out of college. So
yeah, I think I was around like somewhere around Jan or Marsha's age, so I could totally relate, and especially being the middle sister, you know.
Yes, indeed.
I was a Jan.
So where do I get off daring to propose, and I said it's a proposition, we'll discuss it and mm-hmm. invite our listeners to discuss it too. Where do I get off proposing that the Brady Bunch was a disaster for blended families? Well, you can perhaps guess, especially because I think we've talked about this, that I see it a lot in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time, now I so often point out to folks in my practice, I do not have a random sample of people coming to see me. That's the old statistician in me talking. I have what we would call a biased sample, which is to say, for some odd reason, everybody who comes to see me seems to be having some problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get to see the blended families where everything is just hunky-dory like it was on the Brady Bunch.
Right.
All the families I see are having trouble of one kind or another.
Right.
And it's a fairly characteristic kind of trouble. And the reason I decided I would, you know, pick on the Brady Bunch was because... And I'm sure this will surprise nobody who's seen the program, you know. I think it even stuck out at the time that they just elided the whole question of, hey, whatever happened to the other parent,
right.
You know?
Yeah, and it was on the treacly side, I will say that, and a little unbelievable.
Yes, indeed. And I think the ways it's unbelievable are instructive. And that's why I thought, well, gee, let's kind of use that as a jumping off point to talk about the particular issues, certainly the ones I see in my practice,
mm-hmm.
from people who are in blended families. I think I want to comment first on that term blended, which sounds like you put it in a blender. You know, I always thought it was a kind of a funny term, but I think everybody listening, or almost everybody listening to this, probably knows what we're referring to. We're referring to the phenomenon when essentially if two people get married and they don't have the same kids, they're in a blended family.
Right.
That's basically what it comes down to. Before we get into that, though, let's pause for a little commercial break about the book that is the sponsor of this podcast.
And the book is Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And that's the book that came out just about a year ago from when we're recording this in the middle of February. It came out on February 29th of 2020, just in time for a worldwide pandemic, which did a bit of a number on our plans to do some nice, you know, in-person book launch events. But it has nevertheless been getting out to folks, and we've been getting some really nice comments. And I thought today what I would mention is some comments I've actually got in the course of my practice. You know, I'm quite careful in my practice not to be peddling my book to folks who come to see me, but they often are aware of the fact that the book is out because it is publicly known. And I've had a couple of different people talk about how they identify with some of the admittedly invented couples in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, of course, very careful to invent the couples because I didn't want anybody I've actually seen to think, oh my God, you're writing about us, you know, with or without permission. I'm not writing about any actual couples, but all of the examples I give in the book are realistic. And several people in my practice have said, wow, I really identify with, Deirdre and Patrick, or identify with, John and Millie or Ken and Doris. I mean, you can check out the book and read more about those characters.
Well, there's only so many problems you can have, right? Well, I guess there are a lot of problems you can have, but you cover a lot of the problems that couples have.
So. I do. And if I knew the exact Tolstoy quote, I would trot it out right now, mm-hmm. All happy families have the same story, but every unhappy family has their own. So you can get the book anywhere books are sold. You can get it online. You can get it in any of the forms that books are issued in these days, and we hope you will do that. And when you do that, please let us know and comment on it, especially on Amazon is a great place to do it, and tell your friends. So back to our topic now of this provocative proposition, the Brady Bunch was a disaster for blended families. So, when I think about what comes up, one of the ways I have of sort of organizing the ideas in my own mind is there's some common situations, these are all going to make sense, they're kind of pretty straightforward, that each have their own kind of characteristic problems associated with it. So here's one way of thinking about it. There's the situation where somebody who doesn't have kids marries someone who does.
Mm-hmm.
And that presents its own particular problems. And when I see it, it's often because the person without kids has their ideas about what raising kids is all about. And look, I don't mean to be all smug and say, oh, you couldn't possibly have any useful ideas if you don't have kids yourself. No, that's not true. But they often think that they set about to correct their new spouse in how their kids, or how the spouse's kids should be raised. And that usually doesn't go very well, or at least when I hear about it,
right.
It doesn't go very well. It hasn't
Not
been going very well.
Not a good recipe for success.
Not generally a good recipe. Then there's the situation where someone with kids marries someone else with kids. And so now they each have their own kids. They each mm-hmm. have, of course, their own ways of doing things. And they may well disagree about how that ought to go. And, of course, this you have the problem of how the kids view each of the parents. And, of course, that was true in the first situation as well, how the kids view the one of the married couple that isn't their biological parent. And I often refer, when I'm talking with couples about this, to that legal concept of standing. I'm not trying to talk like a lawyer. But standing refers to, if you go to court, like if I was to sue somebody for being, mean to another neighbor, I would not have standing to do so. It's like, no, if the other neighbor wants to sue, they can, but I'm just looking at it and feeling sorry for somebody. That does not give me standing to sue.
Uh-huh.
Well, parental authority isn't automatically granted by kids to their parents. I mean, that's true even with biological parents, but it's especially true with step-parents. So somebody comes into the scene, new in the picture, and if they try to assert parental authority, it can get really sticky.
Yeah.
And then the third situation that comes up is just two people who have adult kids marry. We were almost that
mm-hmm.
when we got married.
Yeah.
I like to say, I inherited two wonderful stepkids when I married you, but I don't get a lot of credit for them because they were pretty well baked, you'd already done a good job on them.
They were mostly out of the house.
They were mostly out of the house. We did have one who was still mm-hmm. living with us for a fairly short time.
Right.
But we didn't have the problems that people have when they have little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a tricky issue, that issue of standing. And what I like to do often with couples around that, and it's, I don't mean to say this makes it all black and white, but it's one way of thinking about it. If you're not the biological parent of a kid, especially if you're relatively new on the scene, it doesn't usually work well to assert the kind of parental authority that's about developing their character. Do you know what I mean? It's like it totally is fine to assert this sort of authority that says, look, I'm an adult living in the house,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm going to enforce that, no, right now you're not allowed to be watching TV, or right now you're not allowed to be playing your music that loud or whatever, because that's the rule of the house, with the understanding that, your mom or your dad agrees with this, we're together on this, and I'm one of the adults, so I'm enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be true of a babysitter.
Yeah.
As well as, and I'm not for a moment saying a step-parent is merely a babysitter, mm-hmm. because they're not.
No, I know what you're saying.
But that it's those sorts of issues, generally kids will say, they may not like it, they may resist, but they're not going to say, well, you have no right to assert adult rules if my mom or my dad is with you on that. Mm-hmm. But to say to a kid, no, I don't think you should be hanging out with those kids because that's not good for you. That's trending into territory that a lot of kids will say, you know, I'm not just talking about kids when they're mad, you know, they'll be thinking, who are you to be telling me what kind of person I'm supposed to be? That's my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, that's especially true if the other biological parent is still in the picture.
Yeah.
And I have to put in a word here. I have known numbers of people over the years where the step-parent has really been granted and has accepted a very parental role because the other parent isn't there.
Right.
Or whether or not the other parent is alive or in contact. I've known lots of, you know the acid test of that one that I've seen? I've known lots of adults. And when I first meet them, generally in the first session, I do a family diagram and mm-hmm. I ask them, you know, about their families. And I've had numbers of adults over the years where they will tell me about their biological parents and they'll tell me about, you know, some particular step-parents. And they'll say, yeah, that one of the stepfathers, that's, I call him dad. He's my dad.
Yeah.
Even if he's divorced from his from the person's mom.
Uh-huh.
And that's really interesting. It's like, yes, even after they divorced, that guy still stayed dad.
Mm.
And that's an interesting, you know, that's like, okay, so, you know, you can't make simple rules about if you're a step-parent, you don't have certain kinds of authority. It mm-hmm. doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the relationship that you have with the child too.
Yeah, very much. And I think it has a lot to do with the relationship that the child has with their biological parent.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's also, well, there you get those poignant stories where parent marries a step-parent and the step-parent is just awful to the kid, or at least the kid thinks so, and often from the stories I hear, often for very good reason. And the biological parent sides with their spouse rather than siding with their kid, and it, as if you have to choose sides. If you're in a situation where you're making your spouse choose sides, you know, in other words, when I married you, mm-hmm. well, we talked about this. This is something I often share with clients as well. When I was in the market, you know, when I was getting back into dating, and for me, it was very brief. I was incredibly lucky to find you so quickly, I have to say. But during that short period of time, what I knew I was looking for was a woman who had kids. I mean, I wasn't black and white about that, but I knew I wanted to find a woman who had kids who would understand my having kids so that, you know, I wanted a woman that if I came between her and her kids, she'd choose her kids.
Mm.
And that meant I wanted to really avoid coming between her and her kids.
Right.
And because I recognized that would be, yeah, I mean, what kind of a mother would you be? What kind of a father would I be if I was willing to, you know, abandon my kids in some way, in some important way, for the sake of my marriage?
Right.
It just wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've had this conversation with folks too. I want to be number one in your life,
mm-hmm.
and I want you to be number one in my life, except I also want your kids to be number one in your life. And I want my kids to be number one in my life.
Oh, that's why things have worked out well between us.
Indeed. But that, you know, I do see lots of circumstances where
it's not always the case.
It isn't. I think that's especially true in the situation where somebody doesn't have kids themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they marry somebody, and then they are often really hurt that the parent will be seemingly favoring time with their kids over time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a painful situation. I have compassion for everybody in the story.
And you also hear these horrible cases. Well, you probably have heard more of them than I have, where a woman will remarry and the stepfather is abusing the children and she'll side with the stepfather.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but we're not getting into that right now. So, but I'm just saying that's an example of a parent siding with a step parent over a child, and that can do unbelievable damage, especially with abuse involved.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is all too common a story. And, you know, sometimes it's because that mother you're describing is too intimidated to leave her abusive spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes she's being abused too. Those are really heartrending stories.
Yeah.
I certainly do hear them. But I think this might be an opportune time for us to turn to a listener question that we selected that just happens to be on this topic.
Julie writes, Dear Dr. Chalmer, 2 years ago, I married Charlie. It is a second marriage for me and a first for Charlie. I have two daughters, ages 9 and 6. Charlie doesn't have children of his own. When we were dating, he was great with the girls, almost like the fun uncle. But since we've been married, and he's now in the parent role, things are very different. By the way, the girls see their dad every other weekend and sometimes during the week, so he is in their lives. Rather than discussing disciplining the girls with me, he will often make choices I might not make. For example, when the 9-year-old didn't complete her homework, he took away her phone for 2 days. He made this decision without consulting me. I didn't agree with the decision, but I did want to put up a united front with Charlie. I didn't want him to think I was undermining him. This is just one example. There are many. And when I do side with Charlie, there are always tears with my daughter saying, "You're always taking his side." One of the reasons my ex and I split up was because we disagreed over child rearing and discipline. I am a firm believer of natural consequences rather than being punitive. Charlie doesn't see it this way. He thinks I'm a pushover. I feel that if my daughters stay up past their bedtime, the natural consequence is they will be tired the next morning, but they still have to get up, go to school, etc. He feels if they stay up, they should be punished and have a privilege taken away. I feel that if they don't want to eat what I'm serving for dinner, they can go hungry. He thinks they should eat it anyway and stay at the table until they finish. It's starting to look like a war zone in our house with the girls and Charlie against each other and me in the middle. How can I stop this?
How indeed?
Oh, poor Julie. Poor Charlie and poor girls.
Yeah, really. And I'll tell you, this is, you know, I could say ripped from the headlines, not literally, but this is very common. I mean, lots of people hearing this who've come to see me, again, might say, well, I could have written that letter. Mm-hmm. You know, the details mm-hmm. aren't there, but that is a very common thing. And one of the things I want to comment first, is sort of I find interesting, is she does say she was having trouble with her ex about this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like this is only about blended family. Mm-hmm. This is not only a blended family issue.
Right.
This
Often
is
two yeah. people have differences of child rearing and discipline and whatnot.
Absolutely. So that can arise anyway. Having said that, it is especially difficult when the girls, you know, who it is, you know, they started off with a good relationship with mm-hmm. Charlie because he was kind of the fun uncle. And they're having a hard time there. And of course, look, I have compassion for everybody in the story, including Charlie. It's hard for him. He has his ideas about how it ought to go. This is a very common problem. I do see it frequently. And it's one of the things I've often mentioned to folks, and it comes up especially in this configuration where it's, I don't know why it tends to be gendered this way. I don't know, but I'll say for what it's worth. A father who doesn't have kids marries a mother who does. He comes on the scene. And, you know, it's pretty clear certainly to the mothers in that situation that I hear about, they know what they're doing. You know, they really do. I mean, she's been raising these kids for a few years before Charlie came on the scene. She's experienced, and she's not merely experienced as a mother in general, but she is the only mother those kids have had, and she's experienced at being that mother, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So all of that level of expertise, here comes Charlie, and he's claiming to know better.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, when they can both calm down, it often turns out that, you know, Charlie's saying, "I think you're a pushover," she might end up agreeing with a little of that. That's what's so interesting about it. It's not like Charlie has nothing to say here. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, you're not a father. You don't know anything. Shut up. Right?
Right.
That tends not to work either because, no, he isn't a father, but he's a person. You know, he's mm-hmm. been a kid himself. He has his ideas, and his ideas don't sound horrible. They just sound different. So, you know, we could judge, you know, who do we decide is doing a better job of this, but that's kind of beside the point. The point is interesting that when they can render this speakable, when they can talk about it without freaking out, it often turns out that Charlie starts realizing he can have some influence on Julie.
Mm-hmm.
And Julie starts realizing he's got something useful to say, but she's not going to listen to that unless she feels absolutely respected for the expertise she has. And he's not going to listen to her unless he feels like she does respect him as another adult who cares about these kids. So they have to be able to, one of my favorite phrases, you know, tolerate the anxiety of having the difference and still listening to each other.
Well, see, now this is where the Brady Bunch comes in.
Absolutely.
And this is where it has valuable advice, because in the Brady Bunch, Mike and Carol, the parents, would talk about things with each other so that to know that they were on the same page. And, you know, you never saw them yelling at the kids, by the way. But they, you know, they would talk to the children about things. So I think in too many families, well, I shouldn't speak for all families. I'll speak for mine. growing up, I think things were a reaction. It was, you do something, and then the parent, usually my mother, would scream at us.
May she rest in peace.
And that was how our problems were handled. There was a lot of yelling back and forth rather than discussing, which could be why I like the Brady Bunch so much, because there was a lot of talking and discussing about why what you did was wrong and can you see it from the other person's standpoint. So I think if Charlie and Julie can sit down and actually talk about things rather than having one of them make the decision. So, for example, if the girl didn't complete her homework, rather than Charlie making a decision, he should have said, Julie, you and I need to talk about something and go off into another space and discuss what it is or what the consequences are. And if they can come to a mutual decision, to come up with alternate decisions and maybe even consult the daughter and say, what do you think that your consequences should be for this?
Which,
you
know, indeed, that I often suggest that when, you know, it works or it doesn't. But I often suggest, you know, involve the kid, involve the kid in the conversation. And if you can do it in a spirit of genuine inquiry, they sometimes will actually participate. And indeed. Now, you know, your point about the Brady Bunch is not one that I think about much, but really worth. I need to think about that. It's like, oh, yeah, they really did talk to each other, didn't they? They didn't just yell. They would kind of work things out together. And that, I suppose, is kind of a way of saying that if they can do that, that's, you know, that's how they became the Brady Bunch, the Brady Bunch.
Right. And, you know, in an ideal world, things would go that way. Now, we don't live in an ideal world. And you, in the moment, you're not always thinking calmly and rationally. But that gets back to, you know, getting a hold of yourself. And I think that's what Charlie and Julie need to do here is really sit down together and discuss this. Because it's different being the fun uncle when you're dating the mom and then being the stepdad when you're in it day to day with the relentless, you know, arguing and the kids not doing what they're supposed to be doing, whether it's homework or chores or television.
Of course, all of our kids were perfect about those things, so we never encountered anything even remotely like that. But just in case anybody listening has actually encountered that sort of disaster, it does happen. It's true. Occasionally, kids are defiant. They don't always do what you're supposed to, what you want them to do.
But, you know, that's what I'm just saying. It's the relentlessness of having to be a parent every, you know, day in and day out, which, you know, after 2 years, that's a long time for him to have two little girls running around and, you know, being pains in the neck, quite frankly.
And you know, you point out something that, again, I think is a poignant situation for any step-parent, which is, here's, let's say, especially this case of a stepfather who doesn't have kids, you know, here's the stepfather who lives with them day in and day out. And when he was just dating, he got to be the fun uncle, as you said. Think about the position of the kid's father, who basically is in that role. That, by the way, tends to be hard for the father, because that's all he gets to be is, you know, he can't really say, I want to have rules and assert them if the mother doesn't agree with it, because the mother's really the vast majority of the time the one, you know, raising the kids. And the stepfather's in the position where he's got the responsibility, but not the authority.
Right. Right. That's a tough role.
It's a very tough role. And not surprising that it, you know, it generates a considerable amount of conflict.
Yeah. So, Charlie, you and Julie have to get together and work this out and talk about it, you know, and it's not a one-time discussion. It's, you know, it's a daily discussion.
Yeah. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't throw in, it wouldn't be a bad idea to see a counselor about this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of thing that we often talk about, and it very often helps people to do that.
Yeah, and I think Julie needs to figure out where the line is between turning over authority, you know, ceding her authority, and, you know, giving Charlie more of a say in what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a hard thing to do.
Yes.
You know, to watch somebody else discipline your rotten kids.
Yes, indeed. That's one way to put it.
Sorry, Julie. I'm sure they're lovely girls.
Absolutely. I thought you were going to say sorry to your kids, who are lovely kids, by the way, but they're long since grown-ups. So I have to say, with respect to the title of our program, the proposition "The Brady Bunch was a disaster for blended families," discuss, I have to admit, Judy, you have convinced me that it was not an unmitigated disaster.
Thank you.
You have pointed out something which has opened my eyes, and I'm thinking, no, it wasn't a it wasn't an unmitigated disaster. It was a mitigated disaster. How's that?
Well, you know, insofar as any sitcom is realistic, you know, it's right up there with, it's a sitcom, you know.
Of course.
So it's, you know, an idealized situation, and that's okay. It's okay to be aspirational, and God knows, very few blended families are that, you know, get along that well. So it's something to strive for. We don't always reach it, but it did give a good example of possibilities.
Well, thank you for opening my eyes on that. So now let's pause for another commercial for the book, and then we'll come back and conclude our podcast. So the book we are referring to is Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. If you search for Dr. Bruce Chalmer, you will find it on any of the online sites. It's available on paper. It's available as a Kindle from Amazon. It's also available as an audiobook as well. And lots of the people that have commented on it have mentioned how helpful it is, whether or not you're in a troubled situation in a couple. Of course, if you are in a situation that is troubling, it's good for that. But it's also good even if you just want to make your relationship better.
Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, your car can use a tune-up, your marriage could also use a tune-up every now and then. So that's why Reigniting the Spark is in the title, because sometimes the spark does start to fizzle a little bit. So
indeed,
it's very helpful to read some of the chapters on how to get that intimacy back into your life.
And that's been some of the comments we've been receiving in reviews. Have been, you know, people saying, you know, I've been married for X number of decades, you know, 35 years or whatever, and happily married, and yet I really learned something from this book. So we hope you will get the book and tell your friends about it. And when you do, tell us what you think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give us a good rating.
So, Judy, tell folks about some of the topics that we are considering for upcoming podcasts.
So we're looking at what can a couple do if one member is exploring the possibility that they're gender fluid or trans. We'll also be looking at intimacy in an era of hookups and other topics, especially if you suggest them.
And the way to suggest them would be just send us an email. You can send us email at bruce@brucechalmer.com. You can go to my website, which is brucechalmer.com. And when you do that, if you go to the podcast tab, you will see there is a place there where you can actually sign up to be interviewed, or you can just use the contact tab to send us some suggestions for you think we might want to interview on the show. We've had some really neat interviews. If you could go back over our past episodes, and we are always looking to interview some really interesting people. We've got some feelers out for some folks we can't announce yet, but we're working on it. And do indeed suggest if you'd like us to either cover some particular topics or interview some particular folks. And we would also like you to let people know about this podcast. And the way to do that is respond, do some kind of engagement with our social media posts, like sharing it is especially good, liking it, commenting, all that kind of stuff is how people find out about it. And wherever you get your podcast from, if you rate us there and also comment there and just plain old tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Our listenership keeps on growing week by week, and we really would like to see that trend continue because this is just a whole lot of fun for us, and we hope it is for you as well.
Yes, so thank you to those of you who have been sharing it, and we know it's been a lot of you because we're growing.
So until next time, remember,
be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.